So the idea of Gallery Talks, the artist edition, is to give our visitors a new perspective, along with those of curators and scholars that we are more accustomed to providing in the galleries. Today, in his talk entitled God is in the Details, John Kessler will lead us through the painting and sculpture galleries for the next hour or so. John, whose work you may have most recently seen at his solo exhibition at PS1 in 2005, or in a group exhibition at the Whitney called Overhead Underfoot, the Topographical Perspective in Photography, is associate professor in the Division of Visual Arts at Columbia. He has an upcoming exhibition in Berlin that opens this August at the Culture House of the World called New York State of Mind. The recipient of a grant from the Schillingen Endowment for the Arts in 1983 and 85, among others, John will be contributing to Parkett in the May 2007 issue. It is a pleasure to have John with us today, so please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you. Why don't we just have a slightly smaller circle? Okay. So I should just start by saying I'm not sure I believe in God, but if there was one, it would be in the details. This is a quote, I don't know if I believe in God, but God is in the details is a quote by Mies van der Rohe. And what he's really talking about there is how in a very large endeavor, there's minute details that to a careful eye, you can really draw attention to. And today what we're really going to be looking at are three different sculptures. The first one is by Giacometti, the second one by Rauschenberg, the third one by Lee Bontekou. And what I want to try to do through these three different works is to really scrutinize the way these pieces were made. So I've spent quite a lot of time up in the galleries sort of really trying to parse out the methods that were used. I'm a sculptor. I work in some ways quite similar to the way these three artists work. I'll talk individually about that whole process, but all to say that one of the really important things about materials and details in art making is that one of the things an artist tries to do is to, in some ways, personalize and take ownership of those materials. And it's kind of the hardest thing to do. Not just because everything's already been done, but just because if you can actually sort of take ownership of those materials and have a way of working with them that's personalized, they kind of belong to you. And then in some ways, within that, you can actually sort of, start spreading your roots and, other people will get accused of stepping on your toes. But it's very, very, it's very difficult it's very difficult to see that process in, let's say, bronze sculpture, almost impossible in stone sculpture. But in the three works we're looking at today, which are all assemblage, it's quite easy to do. You're looking at things like fastening, cutting, the way something is attached, the way something's overlaid, the process it went through on the way to the sculpture. And with a careful attention, you could actually sort of look at sculpture as a roadmap of a performance of the making of the piece. And with careful attention, you could actually backtrack and see the way it was made and sort of make that process come alive. So that's what I'm going to try to do for you today. So let's start up in the fifth floor gallery looking at the Giacometti. So really what's important is to get close, because this is like a miniature sculpture. And get as close as you can, or maybe, as I talk about certain things, you could come in and get a really close look. Okay. So the first thing I want to talk about, the whole idea of this kind of artist talk is that I can somewhat personalize it and talk about myself, interject aspects of my own work. So the sculpture is called The Palace at 4 a.m., and I did a large installation of PS1 about 2 years ago, which I entitled The Palace at 4 a.m. The sculpture has always meant a lot to me, just for its sense of theater, its mise-en-scène, its kind of, its staging. And when I was thinking about my installation, which was really a kind of road trip, of the last 4 years, of the build-up to the war in Iraq and during the war in Iraq and after the war in Iraq, I decided to call it The Palace at 4 a.m. because I was thinking about not so much Giacometti's sculpture, but I was really thinking about Saddam's palaces and the way those were used during that period, locating the troops inside them, and really what happens at 4 o'clock is a sense of bedlam when things like, for example, Abu Ghraib is possible. The moment when no one is watching is really the way I was thinking about it. So if you Google now the Palace at 4 a.m., I'm sharing Google space with Alberto Giacometti, which I don't know how Mom feels about it, but I come up first, so I'm very pleased. So first the historical about the piece. This is a sculpture that Giacometti talked about as evoking a failed relationship that he had had with a woman, a very intense relationship that he had with a woman for 6 months. Every night, they would build a palace out of fragile matchsticks, and every day, they would destroy it. To identify the figures here, he has claimed that the figure, he actually said that this sculpture came to him in a dream. The sculpture on the left is identified as his mother. Now, I'm not sure what his mother is doing in his sex life dream, but there she is on the left, according to Giacometti. The situation in the center, what I consider like a mortar and pestle, or a penis and a vagina, some sort of tongue, or some sort of organic body part, is he identifies as himself. Now, one of the most beautiful things about the construction of this sculpture, first of all, I should say that when you think about Giacometti, you really don't think about this work. I mean, this is an early work, certainly, but it's also in the same year he was making the sculpture to your right here, Woman with Her Throat Cut. So the bronze pieces are really what Giacometti is known for. And this sort of piece, which in terms of craft, in terms of making, is much closer to something like model making, shipbuilding. If you've ever made model airplanes, model ships, this is really the technique that Giacometti used in making this. It's very, very fine. And getting close to this piece is very rewarding because of the details in the sculptures. So I'm just going to point out some of those, which I find really fascinating. If you look at the wood, if you think about the way that wood posts in a bed are constructed, they're usually done on a lathe out of a square piece of wood. So it's a long square piece of wood, and then they're put on a lathe and rounded. And that's the way all of these central struts that create this piece are constructed. So if you look at the round into the square, really evoking a kind of bedpost, which really does sort of, it reinforces that whole idea of sexuality, the bed, the bedroom. One of the things that I've often wondered about this sculpture is the wood is warped. A lot of these pieces, many of the pieces are, really straight. And that comes from, letting wood dry for a certain amount of time, and just in terms of the technique of woodworking, you have to let it dry out so that it actually doesn't warp. But a lot of the pieces are warped. And Giacometti was a master of his materials. And I just wonder if that was actually, he used them, he used them warped. So if you look closely, you'll see quite a lot of pieces that are bowed. The glass, you probably can't see it when you're looking straight on. But if any of you know about like glass that has lead in it, it's got waves in it. And you see that a lot in old buildings. And so that's one indication that this is probably the original glass. If you look at it from the side, you will really see it. It's very, very clear that this glass has waves in it, which is quite beautiful and rewarding when you get close to it. I want to draw everybody's attention to the base, because there's going to be an echo of this downstairs when we go. But look at the base. It almost looks like a found object. It almost looks like something that you would expect, like a child's desk or something made for industry in some way to have been a prefabricated item. But if you look really close, you'll see that it's actually quite eccentric. It's not symmetrical. One side has a different curve than the other, and the curves are also, they're not smooth. They're kind of a little jagged. And so you really sort of do get the sense that this was cut by Giacometti with a jigsaw, or with a scroll saw, but totally done by hand and to some degree sanded but also wanting to leave that sort of sense of fragility and the hand in the work. There's also, for those who want to, you know, take a closer look, on the bottom of this piece, there's a little plaque, and it's kind of hard to really tell what it says in this kind of environment. The lighting is bad, and it's also pushed up against the wall, but there's a little plaque on the bottom, and I have a feeling it has, it's a signature, but it's sort of a little plaque, as well as a number, which is 90.06, which is written directly on the piece in red Sharpie. Now, that's a curious thing. Usually, I mean, it's probably not going to be, you know, the museum who would write directly on the piece, but those are little questions that I have about what the origin of those sort of, you know, a piece that gathers, like a steamer trunk that goes traveling, a piece that gathers information and gathers, you know, little, you know, bits of wear and tear and information. Adding to the stage of this piece are these three white, what I call wings. In theater, there are the wings that sort of identify the sides of the stage and identify what we call the suspension of disbelief. So in a theater, you don't look beyond the wings. Even if you have a crappy seat on the side, you're really sort of like looking at the action that happens inside that. But that's the way I always saw those three, or, you know, some sort of creating this even more of a stage-like setting. Now, I do want to, this has little to do with Giacometti. It's more to do with, you know, the institution. But just pay attention to the way this piece is installed. I mean, really sort of foregrounding the idea of this piece as a proscenium. This piece is pushed up against the wall. There's no way the viewer can do this. You just can't. And, you know, as a sculptor, I sort of take a little bit of offense to that because I really sort of do think about, we all think about what the piece looks like when you make it in three dimensions. And so it's sort of unlike the other Giacometti piece, which is really there, especially because it's a figure with the idea that you see the front and the back. But in this piece, it's really sort of pushed up against the wall, accenting the proscenium aspect of the piece. If you take a close look at the you know, what's called the prehistoric bird, the head is modeled after a European-style wood clamp. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but wood clamps typically have this sort of, you know, two jaws that you screw in. It's also, you can actually see the little knife marks. This piece is whittled. You know, this piece is not, and this, I mean, this is like, you know, really whittling with a tiny carving knife. So one of the curious things about this piece in the middle, you know, what I was describing as a sort of mortar and pestle, ball joint, which really does symbolize in some ways the sexual act in this piece. There's a little white wedge just to the right of the sled, of the lozenge. And it's really curious. You know, what is that doing there? You know, Giacometti's piece is full of attachments. It's full of little dowels and little nails that are holding this whole piece together. So he really doesn't need that structurally. He doesn't need that as an attachment. And it's clearly there to reinforce this idea of stability. It's a wedge. It's really there as a kind of, you know, placeholder for this piece on the shelf. And I do also, I do really want to urge, I do urge you to, you know, come up and take a look at the fastening of these pieces of wood, because it's really, they're doweled, you know, which is really obsessional. It's really beautiful. It's not just like tiny little nails that someone put in. Maybe there are nails behind that, but they were doweled. It's not wood putty. It's dowels. And so that really is an incredible attention to a kind of, you know, obsession to detail in this work. The other thing that's really beautiful about this piece is there's numerous different ways that he uses knots. And again, I guess I'm thinking about the evocation of shipbuilding, you know, like model ships. But there's some really beautiful knots here and really beautiful ways of using rope to give the impression of solidity or torture or even free hanging. And probably the best example of that is if you look at the slip knots that the prehistoric bird is hanging by, and there's almost a sense of motion there. You know, these are not tight knots. There's actually quite a lot of space in those knots, and you really do get the sense of movement in that work. Are there any questions about the piece or about construction techniques, or, you know, sort of having a sculptor here to answer anything that you might not necessarily about his method per se, but or any comments about this piece.
Did he write anything? Did he describe it?
He did. He did. That's actually, there's a nice, if you get the tour, the audio tour, there's a kind of a quote, you know, about his dream, about, you know, the building of, from Matchsticks. And it's hard not to see this piece also, I mean, without sort of psychoanalyzing it too much, it's hard, although it is a surrealist work, so that's par for the course. It is hard not to see this as a prison. You know, it's hard not to see this as some sort of jail. And, you know, this was a failed relationship. His mother, a sort of dream sequence. It's really hard not to see, especially the spine, you know, as in some sort of trap. But the whole thing, you know, really does have a sort of a very dramatic sense of staging and capture. The other sort of interesting use of the string is, and it's totally unnecessary, is up here in the tower you have wire that's actually being used to hold the four pieces to give it structure and probably hold them away from each other, and then the string is really being used to actually hold them all together, sort of to bind them. So it's a kind of a binding, and all of those things, I guess maybe I was sort of mentioning it downstairs, all of those things actually, all of these fastening techniques, all of these material techniques, all of these processes actually give the piece emotion. And they can be read. They really truly are a roadmap to how a piece gets interpreted and seen and felt without too much, without too much trouble. I mean, whether you actually are conscious of it or not, you feel them in a piece.
How is the bird held together? Is it one piece or is it strung together?
No, you can actually see the glue. You can see, if you look at the neck going to the body, the body is clearly one piece, right, carved out. And then you could actually see a sort of a lighter color. It looks like it's, attached with a kind of glue. The arms actually are probably drilled and pegged in.
Would it be a stretch to suggest that that sort of binding upon the top part of the structure there could be referring maybe to medieval painting and sort of that strange skewed perspective that you see?
Yeah.
The architecture.
Yeah.
Here's a very flat with everything now.
Yes. Yes, that's great. Yeah, so before there was actually sort of a history of perspectival, one-point perspective. It was sort of all this, strange cheating of that to show distance. Yeah, that very well could be, which would, again, enforce a proscenium viewing of this piece, by Giacometti. I think that's really what he wanted here. Not to say that the side views are not also rewarding. And I'm an artist who I make sculpture, but I really do also think of it as a front and a back.